Welcome to the Dungeon Plunger Podcast. My name is Jason Weeb, and this is the show in which I, a real-life janitor and dungeon master, teaches you how to plunge in and run a better Dungeons & Dragons game. Without further ado, let's plunge into this week's episode. Welcome, Dungeon Plunger Union members. I have a special guest with me today, Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you for having me, Jason. I really appreciate it.
This is going to be kind of weird. Should we like call each other Jason, or should we like go by our last names?
Nah, I think the listeners will be able to tell us apart. You just need to use that meme of Spider-Man pointing at himself for your clip art for the show.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. I think that I'm going to do that. All right. So I decided to have you on the show so that we could talk a little bit about Palladium and riffs and stuff like that. Have a little bit of a... I just wanted to kind of have a little, you know, nerd down. And Rifts is one of those games that I've heard a lot about and know very little about at the same time, if that makes any sense to you. So what's your experience with Rifts and you know, take it away.
Yeah, so Rifts is interesting. Rifts is a kitchen sink setting. Rifts is actually later on in the Palladium line, though.
Oh, so really?
I'd kind of like to do a history of Palladium, a little, you know, just a 10,000 foot overview history of Palladium and discuss the different products they've had and kind of what built the Rifts. But just to answer the, you know, the immediate question, the idea of Rifts, their Rifts occurred, you know, a couple centuries in the future. Mankind was having a, you know, pretty good time. We had pretty hot technology. We were doing good. And then for some reason, there was these cataclysms, magic cataclysms, and a lot of people died, and that opened up more magical cataclysms and rifts and creatures and things came from all different dimensions into Earth, and it kind of tore everything apart. And so Rifts is a world where you can have everything from you know robots and guys in power armor to, you know, D&D style dwarves to dragons to, you know, aliens to superheroes to whatever. It's one of those true multiversal kind of settings where, like I say, everything with the kitchen sink.
Okay.
It's got a good villain in there. It's got this human run empire that are basically like human supremacists. They hate magic users and muties and stuff like, or they don't call them muties in this setting, but you know, they okay. effectively, you know, they hate non-humans and they have this, And they've genetically modified dogs to be dog boys and you know, kind of like humanoid dogs. Wow. And of course, the dog boys are the coolest thing in the setting because everybody loves dogs, right?
So this is true.
Yeah. So they're out there. So that's one of the cool things in there, all their power armor. So they've changed over the years, the bad guys in the Rift setting, where in the first earlier editions, they had really, really cool armor, like skulls all over it, kind of like, yeah, you know, obviously Nazi kind of looking armor a little bit, because they're, you know, they're effectively Nazis, right? They're the bad right. guys. And but the coalition states is what they're called, but all the stuff was like built around skulls. So like the transport, like their troop transport on ground was like this big skull and spider legs that would crawl along, and like all everything's built around skulls. And you know, so when you have like teenage boys and stuff, it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's awesome, right?
Yeah. Was this pre, or was this like parallel with Games Workshop and Warhammer, or was this like something that came afterwards?
I think it's slightly after. Let's see when Warhammer really got going. So this is 1990.
Okay.
Because for some reason, I want to say like Warhammer got hot and heavy really in the 90s. Oh no, so like 87 was the first of Warhammer 40K. So yeah, so this is after Warhammer and Warhammer 40K. 40K is probably a better analogy to it, right? But yeah, so, but it's that kind of thing. And then later on when they came out with an updated version, they changed some of those designs for their stuff, and they've kind of gotten away from the idea of, you know, trying to make them look super cool. But it's a neat setting because you have that villain, then you have all kinds of different groups, and you're in this post-apocalyptic, you know, North America normally. But Rifts also has a ton of world books. I mean, dozens and dozens of world books covering both our world and other worlds and other dimensions. But they have world books for South America and England and Europe and, you know, Africa and Asia and all over. So you're not stuck playing in North America. You can play anywhere. And it's just one of those really huge, cool settings. So that's why people like it. And it's a setting where to mix the things together. And one of the things you hear people joke about with Rifts and Palladium is something called mega damage. You've probably heard that term or seen it in memes or something like that. And basically, 1 point of mega damage is 100 points of regular damage.
Oh, you know, okay.
But they do that so you can, you know, so when you're doing the bigger creatures and tanks and power armor, you're not, all the damage isn't in the thousands and 10,000s and things like that. And the idea is a weapon that only does regular damage can't harm mega damage armor. You know, think about it. If you have a tank sitting there, you could shoot it with a pellet gun all day long and you're not going to hurt it.
Right.
So that's the idea where obviously mega damage though can hurt regular things. And you know, the problem with the setting is you have mega damage like handguns and mega damage melee weapons and stuff. So any character or creatures in the setting that do mega damage just wipe the floor with anything that doesn't have mega damage. And Palladium famously does not have any kind of balance. So you have characters that are like, you know, like homeless drifters that go around and, you know, like street rats alongside of guys in power armor and alongside of literal dragons. Like a dragon is one of the character classes.
Right? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So it's a pretty crazy world. I mean, it's a cool world and it's fun, but it's, yeah. So that's Rifts, like in a nutshell. It's just this crazy kitchen sink thing. You can do any kind of adventure. If you get in like the big cities, the technologically advanced cities, you could do cyberpunk in there if you wanted to. You could do, you know, those kind of adventures. So you can do just about anything in the world. It's okay. So that's Rifts kind of in a nutshell.
All right. So take us back then to where this all began.
So this began many, many years ago in Detroit, Michigan. Kevin Symbiota, and I'm probably saying his name wrong. I'm sorry, Kevin. He's the brain behind Palladium Books. And he actually wanted to get into comics. He wanted to be an artist. And you can find his art in various older games and products. You know, his art is in a number of things, including some of the Palladium stuff. But what happened was he was also running games, you know, they're in Detroit playing games, and he came up with his own kind of basically house rules for AD&D. And so the Palladium system's basically heavily house ruled AD&D, and then it's kind of developed into its own thing, but that's kind of how it started.
Okay.
He always wanted to have kind of a multiversal kind of system where you could play any kind of adventure, but the first big one he was going to try to publish was Palladium Fantasy. His fantasy setting. But that wasn't the one that first got published. The first one that got published was the Mechanoid Invasion, which is actually a really cool setting. So the Mechanoids are these, it's an outer space setting. It's a sci-fi setting. And the idea is, in the original role-playing game, you're a set of humans that were out in a colony, and these aliens, they like cyborg aliens, show up. And their mission is to eradicate all humanoid beings and take over, right? And you're in this fight for survival against the cyborg invasion. And they're vastly more powerful than you. That was what the Mechanoid Invasion was, that first role-playing game they did. And that was pretty popular. They're mainly selling them like at cons and, you know, locally and things like that. But he got to the point where he's able to make enough money to get Palladium Fantasy published. And Palladium Fantasy is like AD&D turned up to 11 on crack, right? You've got it's great. It's but, you know, and this was during the Satanic Panic, and AD&D it cranks back, you know, and they take the devils and demons out of AD&D second edition and all that, right? Well, Palladium Fantasy has all that. They have a summoner class that summons that. They have a diabolist class. They have a class in there that just does like runes and summoning circles and crazy stuff like that. It's kind of a crazy world, but it's actually one of the more playable versions of Palladium because it's more straightforward. There's less weird stuff in there.
Okay.
And it actually plays pretty good.
So
go ahead.
Just to go back for 2 seconds. So when you're talking about the Mechanauts, right? So this is like a completely separate like world. It has nothing to do with Palladium, like in terms of the Rifts thing, or does that eventually come into it down the line?
It does.
Okay.
No, it does. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Yeah. So all these will mix together, which is kind of, so Rifts, this, I think it's the second world book in Rifts, like the second book in Rifts is Mechanoids in Rifts and the idea of the Mechanoids showing up on Rifts Earth.
Nice. Okay.
And, yeah. So yeah, these do kind of tie together and you can take, and there's a conversion book to convert any of the Palladium games to Rifts. So you can bring Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and it has how to convert them into, you know, bring them into Rifts. Because the basic system's the same and it's stayed pretty constant since the 80s. They haven't really changed their game system much at all. There are adjustments as they go, but for the most part, it's the same system.
Would you say that like the criticism that something like Shadowrun gets, for example, where it's like a totally cool world and universe, but the rules are leave a lot for people to desire? Do you feel like there's the parallel between Palladium and their worlds and their rule systems, or am I conflating the two?
No, you're not. So Palladium's big, and you have to remember when Palladium first came out, they were still laying out by hand, right? You're still typing things and do hand. We're talking early 80s. So you're talking hand layout, you know, not modern techniques or any of that stuff. And yeah, they definitely needed better editing. No question about it. And so the character creations like spread in different weird parts of the book. And like I've run in the past few years, run Palladium Fantasy for a group, and I've run After the Bomb, which is it's like Rifts Light. So After the Bomb is a setting that started with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with the idea there's a catastrophe and then you have all the mutant animals are still around, and so it's basically post-apocalyptic but you're all mutant animals, right?
Okay.
It's basically After the Bomb. And so we ran a Roadhog scenario for that, which Roadhogs are biker gangs, you know, like actual, you know, pigs and boars ride motorcycles,
right? That's right? Awesome.
Yeah. So we did that. If you think of, you know, what was the movie with the boss? Stone Cold. So it's kind of like Stone Cold, but with mutant animals was the adventure we did for that.
Okay.
Yeah. But so the worlds are really cool. And as I go through hit the highlights of these other worlds, you're going to say, wow, these are great settings. But yeah, because the way these games are laid out, it can be hard to find things in the books.
Okay.
And it's not, and it's like D&D. I think D&D is a good parallel here. You know, they kind of expected you to have a certain amount of knowledge that you would have only gotten playing at the table with Kevin or somebody else that knows the game. So like you read these books and like you're missing little bits here and there. Like, how do I make this work? And Kevin would tell you, you listen to interviews with him, well, you know, the rules are just there to help you. But, you know, if you want to leave this out or do this or whatever, do what to keep the game flowing. But the rule books don't say that. Right.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, so the rules are definitely the tough part here because you do have to kind of make up, you know, do some links on your own and kind of come up with some stuff on your own. That's getting better. So we're waiting for the fulfillment of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Redux. Okay. And with that, where they don't own the turtle license anymore, but they were allowed to do it by, you know, whatever company, I think it's Sony that owns the turtles. And now these books are all redone, all computer laid out. You know, they've re-edited everything, brought other people in to do it. So when these come out, that's going to be the version of the rules that should be easy to read and make sense. And I think that's going to be kind of like the Rosetta Stone for like, snap, I get it. Now I understand how to run this. And
right.
Going forward, they're going to have other books along that line. Okay. So hopefully that, but yeah, you're not wrong though. Like Shadowrun, so the rules in Palladium aren't unplayable, but like you definitely, it's a game you almost have to learn from somebody that knows the game, if that makes right. sense.
Yeah. That makes sense. So just one more tangent before we
before I
let you go back to where you're. So you've mentioned Ninja Turtles a few times. Yeah. And when I look at the website, I can see. So did Kevin have a connection to the Ninja Turtles, like the comic books and stuff like that? Or he just licensed Ninja Turtles?
So Kevin has stayed in touch with comics like the whole time because he's a comic artist at heart, right?
Okay.
And so he saw these comics come out. And he said, wow, these are really cool. We need to get these. And so he called up, you know, Eastman Liard, and he said, hey, you know, can we license your thing? Or he called their agent or what? But, and I think he actually talked to them. He tells the story. I'm going to give you. So anybody, we're doing, like, say, the 10,000 foot view. If anybody wants to hear, you know, a podcast from people that love Palladium that aren't negative towards other games, that are, you know, actually a positive podcast, which, like, something like what you do and what I try to do. You know, that we, you know, we don't want to hear a lot of negativity. There's a podcast called The Glitter Boys. And I think you're going to put a link in the show notes for them.
Yep, absolutely.
And they cover all these titles. They have episodes like on each of the individual games and aspects of the games. But they also have a series of interviews with Kevin where he talks about the history of the company.
Okay.
So if you're more interested in, if you want to hear more about this stuff, check out The Glitter Boys and those episodes. But basically he reached out to him and they were just starting, because I don't know if you remember, I remember when the Ninja Turtles first came out, those comics first came out. They're black and white comics. And the original Ninja Turtles before the cartoons and even before the movie were gritty, gritty comics. I mean, they're ripoffs. So there was kind of like a spinoff of Daredevil, not a spoof, like a ha-ha spoof of Daredevil, okay. But they're definitely takeoffs of Daredevil where, like, you know, you have the hand and you have the foot and you right. have, you know, you have stick. And you have Splinter is
right.
the teacher of the,
okay.
the turtles and stuff, right?
I didn't know yeah. about that connection. Like, for me, my first introduction to the Ninja Turtles was the Saturday morning cartoon. And I had no idea for a very, very long time that it actually had been a comic book series. And that, like you said, the comic book was a lot more serious than...
Yeah, they killed people and yeah. all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah. So but that's really cool. All right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he reached out to them. He got license, and they said, "Yeah, you can write the game," and they gave him license. And actually, the initial license was perpetual. They had it written, and he gave it back to him at some point when
okay.
you know they're bigger. He because Kevin catches a lot of crap, and you'll get people give him a hard time mainly because when the internet started getting big and fan sites became getting big. There were a lot of people that published a lot of fan sites and fan expansions and things like that. And they would include like sections of the rule books or stuff like that. And Palladium was one of the companies that went pretty hard after fan sites saying, you can't publish our stuff. Not that you right. can't publish your stuff, but you can't put our text on your fan site, you know, or our art on your fan site.
Yeah. So, and that's not unreasonable.
Trademark. Yeah. yeah. But they caught a lot of flack over that. So there's hard feelings towards, well, and maybe they went too hard.
TSR did the same thing, right?
Yeah.
TSR was, they went after people like religiously when all that stuff happened, right? So I just think it was a part of that time period, right? It's this new mm-hmm. technology that's emerging and, you know, you want to protect your rights. And, you know, I think we're going through a similar thing with that right now with AI, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that you'll, the two other complaints real quickly, because, you know, just to voice them, because, you know, we're trying to be fair here.
Yep.
Kevin, you'll see his name on just about all the books, not all the books, though. But if he asks, there are times he'll go and rewrite people's work or do stuff. And so there are people who say, well, he claimed credit for my work. And maybe in some cases, you know, he didn't give enough credit to somebody else. That's possible. But for the most part, I think Palladium has a reputation for being pretty fair with paying other creators and all and paying the artists and stuff like that and the writers. The other thing that they catch a lot of flack over is they had a failed Kickstarter for Robotech. And it wasn't all their fault. The other company involved that owned Robotech at the time kind of defaulted on it too. but there's a lot of bad blood over that bad Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So those are like the three things you'll hear about Palladium: the takedown of the fan sites, Kevin being kind of overzealous with putting his name as the author of books, and then the Robotech Kickstarter. So those are like the three big, and to be fair, also the idea, the rules are, you know, not very, you know, it's better to take the setting and run it with different rules.
Right, right.
But what setting? So we mentioned Robotech. So in 86, so Kevin, in addition to being a comic book nerd, is also an anime nerd. And he'd been watching all this stuff. So when Robotech hit the scenes over here, he said, we got to get this. And they got the license for Robotech and did the Robotech role-playing game. And they had that.
Okay.
Yeah, and they did that too.
Okay, hold on. Did
they
incorporate Robotech into the Rifts universe, or was it completely separate?
You can incorporate it, but they didn't because they didn't have robots because the licensing time frames.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, because the licensing time frames, it's not, and Turtles isn't really either.
Okay.
Because of the license, like, you, if you buy Rift books, you won't see Turtles in them or Robotech, you know, Max, or, you know, whatever they are.
Yep.
But the systems are all compatible though.
Okay.
For what it's worth.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. But we talk about other things. They had a superhero setting called Heroes Unlimited, which was cool. There's,
was Heroes Unlimited like the sort of like a GURPS style superheroes game?
All use the same system. They all use the same, which the system has attributes like AD&D does, right? You've got your main attributes, and then you've got skills, which are D100 skills. So if you think like the way Kevin Crawford does his stuff, it's not that different. What is different? But it's kind of like Kevin Crawford's, where you have the idea, the skills work one way, they're percentile skills, and then combat's D20 based.
Oh, okay. So, interesting.
It's that kind of system. He changes up the alignment stuff because famously he said neutral doesn't make any sense. You know, so instead of neutral, you have selfish in the Palladium alignment system.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which actually kind of does make sense, because if you're total neutral, I mean, you know, it's...
I mean, I suppose it's debatable, selfish. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But let's see. What other games do we have here? We have ninjas and super spies, which can work. And any of these, you can mix and match. Ninjas and super spies, get in the ninjas of the 80s, right? And then like cybernetics and stuff like that, James Bond, all that mixed together. Beyond the supernatural is their supernatural setting, their horror setting.
Okay.
Where you, the characters in Beyond the Supernatural, even though you have psychics and things like that, you even have a character class of the nega psychic who doesn't believe. And so his negative energy, you know, kind of makes it harder for psychics to do their thing. But the monsters are super terrifying in that game. And that game's, it's actually a cool game. You have, what else do we have? We have Nightbane. Nightbane is, so you've probably seen the movie Nightspawn. Or is it Nightbreed? Nightbreed's the...
Clive Barker.
Clive Barker.
Yep.
So Nightbane is kind of like that in a game.
Interesting.
It's slightly different in... There's an alternate dimension where there's like an invasion from like this dark dimension into Earth. But your heroes are humans that have like... Kind of like the Nightbreed, have this other form. And they can... But they can transform back and forth. But there are random tables in there. So your other form might have like a motorcycle lower half, or might have these crazy, it's nuts. They have Recon. The one game they have that doesn't use their other system, their house system, is Recon, and that's a Vietnam game. And Recon was a miniature skirmish game that they got the rights to, and they adapted it from miniature skirmish to role-playing game. And it's a simpler system than the Palladium system.
Okay.
But I've run that as well in the past 5 years or so, and it still stands up. It works pretty good. They have a zombie game, Dead Rain. They have, you know, so you have all these different games out there.
Yeah, they've really covered the like thing. I think, you know, like one thing that we're going to have to talk about at some time in the future is because I know you've wanted to talk about ninjas before, and it's like, you know, I remember growing up and ninjas were like the rage. Like it was this thing where like everybody wanted to be a ninja, and now it's like you don't really hear about ninjas anymore. It's like not really, it's like somehow it's not really cool to be a ninja anymore, which is, what's up with that, dude? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, that's definitely a future show.
No ninja love, man.
Yeah. but I think we've kind of hit the high points of the kind of talk about some of this. Riffs is still out there. They've licensed Riffs out to Savage Worlds.
Yep.
So you have Savage Riffs. What's interesting is Savage Riffs is meant to work with Riffs. So the way it's written, there aren't world books, source books duplicated between the two lines. Because the idea is if you have Savage Riffs and you're playing that, you can pick up any of the regular Riffs source books and use those as your setting books and your source books.
Okay, so that's fantastic. Because honestly, like I'm on the website for mm-hmm. Palladium, and I'm just looking at these covers and everything. And I mean, I've seen some of the older art for these books, and I mean, this is some classic RPG stuff right here. And so it always frustrates me when you see a resurrection or a reinterpretation of some of these properties, and then somehow you're missing that feel mm-hmm. that the original had, you know? So this idea that you could take that old material and then use it with a newer system and still maintain the value.
Right.
Like that's such a great, idea.
Yeah. The cool thing is you can take pretty much other than Recon, you can take pretty much any of these games and they're not exactly the same. There's slight differences, but you really can mix and match pretty easily across the board from, you know, 1983 Palladium Fantasy. There's a second edition that brings a little more in line with Riffs and all that, but you really can mix and match between all these, which is kind of cool. The other thing with Palladium, if you're interested in getting involved in these, or you're curious, or you start getting involved in these, every year for Christmas, and they start like at the end of October and November, they do a Christmas sale where they do what they call a grab bag. And basically you send a list of, you know, here's my list of 20 things I'm interested in, and you'll get, like, you know, for X amount, like you pay X amount and you have this list, and you end up, you're getting a much cheaper than the cover price. For one, they'll pick like 12 of those 20 things and send them to you or whatever. Right.
Right.
But they also have anybody on site at that day, you know, artists, writers, Kevin, whoever, they sign the books and stuff. Like, I've got books that I bought on the Christmas things with, you know, where Kevin's doodled dragons in them and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
And they, you know, they'll sign them for you and all. But that's like, if you can wait till like that sale, you can clean up with those sales, because you get great value for those. The books are, so they were one of the early softcover books in publishing. We're talking about the 80s, you know, back then it was really hardcover books, and the Palladium are the full size, the size of the hardcovers, but they're softcovers. And they're books, so the older books, the laminate on the outside of the cover would kind of peel away a little bit. But other than that, the books like are solid. Like, I've still got books from the early 80s that are still together, you know?
Like, yeah, it feels like those kind of books were built differently than the books of today.
Yeah, definitely.
Now I got my old man voice on. Damn you, kids, get off my lawn.
That's right. Yeah. But so Savage Riffs, if people are familiar with Savage Worlds, Savage Riffs does a couple things. It does try to equalize out balance, which is something Palladium still doesn't care about, which is fine. I mean, that's up to the, you know, each group, how much that matters to you, and GMs can offset that, you know, with how they do it, with their players making their characters and all that. But Savage Riffs intentionally tries to work around that balance issue, and they've done it with some clever ways. It uses Savage Worlds, but it is crunchy Savage Worlds, so it's right on the edge of how much crunch you can have in Savage Worlds without getting too clunky.
If interesting. That makes sense. Yeah,
but it does work pretty well. I know if you go over our buddy Carl Rodriguez's page, or you go to his YouTube channel, the Gemologist, Gemologist Presents, you can find some Savage Riffs playthroughs on there.
Oh, sweet.
So if you want to watch and see how Savage Riffs plays.
You know, maybe I'll put a link for that in the show notes too.
Yeah. So, yeah, Savadress is cool. It works. I kind of like the regular Risk, but that's me just because I've got the history nostalgia with it and all that.
Yeah, definitely.
But Savage Worlds is one of the great, if you like cinematic games and games where your characters are heroes and you want that kind of extra, you know, pulpy feel, Savage Worlds is a great system you can run just about anything in. You can make it work for Grimdark, but it doesn't really work for Grimdark, to be honest. It's really more of a pulpy cinematic. But Savage Worlds is one of the great systems that I think gets forgotten. Maybe that's a future episode.
Well, I'm definitely going to be talking about Savage Worlds in the future because my youth group, we just started this week. We made characters for Deadlands.
Oh, cool.
And and so I'm really, really excited, and they're really excited. And the possibilities of, you know, potentially, like, I'm not super keen on and learning a new system necessarily, but the setting material is what really, really inspires me when I look at some of this stuff. Like, it's fantastic, man. So, I would probably be more inclined to get these books to use with Savage Worlds. Mm-hmm. But I did want to, like, one of the things, when you're talking about balance being out of whack, like, that's one of those comments that's kind of made about even like D&D, like old school D&D, that, like, you know, you shouldn't worry about balancing encounters and all that kind of stuff. So how much of that is like, wow, this game is really out of whack, versus it's a question of like, how do you play the game to kind of counterbalance that?
Like, it's tough, right? Because it's one of those things where your classes aren't balanced at all. And not necessarily like, oh, well, the magic user has 4 hit points and the fighter has 8 hit points. It's not like that. It's like, you know, this guy's a dragon and this guy's a human thief with, you know, a knife and a 22, right? It's literally... Now, that's not saying the thief doesn't have skills, right? But he doesn't have some skills the dragon's not going to have. Because what they do is the dragons in this game are hatchlings when you start. So they're not like ancient dragons. They're like just learning. But they're still mega damage creatures, and they're still, you know, they're still dragons, right? They're still So when I say balance, like if you took the different character classes in here, like and put them in combat against each other, like some classes totally outmatch the others. Like there's no question. But if if the game master builds the game and builds the challenges that and around the characters, you can definitely do it. The Vagabond is the name of the, like, the thiefy kind of guy. There's also like a rogue scientist, a rogue scholar, a city rat, all these things. But you know, none of those guys have, you know, like they're not walking around in friggin' Robotech kind of armor, which you had. Like there's the most powerful armor in Rifts is the Glitter Boy, and the Glitter Boy's got this huge cannon on its shoulder, and it's got before it shoots its gun, it's got kind of like spikes in its boots that nailed it to the ground.
Okay,
when it fires the gun, right? and it's a super power, you know. So it's this crazy powerful thing. And then awesome. You got it next to like the city rat dude, you know, it's got it next to like, you know, Mad Max standing next to it. Right.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Yeah. So the way Kevin talks about it is, you know, it's kind of up to the game master, but he looks at these as story games too, not story games, I guess. And the story game has kind of got a bad term in some circles.
Yeah.
But he looks at it as, you know, we're here, we're going to have fun together, and we're going to tell a cool story together. Not necessarily a super collaborative, like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if my guy did this, but it's going to be fun. And if you need to bend the rule here or there so cool stuff happens, that's okay. Like the rule cool is a thing, right? And I think if you play like with that mindset, these games work pretty well. If you try to play them just like rules is written on the page, we're going to be super serious. I think it's a lot harder, you know, it's a lot harder to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I've definitely, I feel like that was something that I acquired, that mentality of like, we got to play by the rules, when I was playing, you know, Dungeons and Dragons third edition and onward. Mm-hmm. And I've really grown to this whole thing of like, hey man, you know, let's adapt these rules to our individual table and tastes. And, you know, we're not going to have any like RPG police busting down the door going, hey, you're playing the game wrong. And, you know, maybe there's some guy on the internet that really doesn't like the way I'm playing, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to fly to my house and beat me up either. So, but right, listen, exactly. If it happens, I will let you know that I found the first guy to fly to my house to beat me up because I'm not playing the game properly. But yeah. I just wanted to ask, so, okay, so you said there's skills, but mm-hmm. you're also talking about like, you could be a dragon and these different classes. So it's a sort of combined skill based and class based game.
Yeah. So it's class and level.
Okay.
It's class and level. They have attributes, kind of like D&D does. One neat thing, although the new versions are, so Palladium traditionally you had bonuses for high attributes, but you didn't have negatives for low attributes.
Interesting.
I think in the later editions, they have changed that, which I'm not a big fan of. I kind of like the earlier ones. But you also have skills, and you get skill packages and can get individual skills. And those are, like, in the different games. So, like, we recently ran After the Bomb, which is kind of like Rift's Light. And that was one I was telling you about, like, with the mutant animals and all that.
Yep.
And I like that game because it's a little bit more hopeful. And then the apocalypse is over, and we've rebuilt to the point where you've got, like, nations and cities and, you know, different nations, animals and stuff. And there's some evil humans mixed in there too. But, and then you're kind of exploring the other wastelands and stuff like that. But when you build your character's background, it's not quite like a traveler background build, but you roll to see what your background is, where, what kind of place you came from, and maybe what your apprenticeship was. And you get skill packages from those things.
Okay. So a little bit of a life path.
Yeah, a little bit of a life path, but not like, it's not like total Cyberpunk 2020 or Traveler.
Right.
But it's gotcha. Like that, a light version of that.
That's cool.
Yeah. And like I say, it's kind of like the Kevin Crawford stuff where your skills are kind of like a separate system. And yep. In this case, they're a percentile system.
Instead
okay. Of, you know, the 2D.
Interesting.
2D12 or 2D8, depending on the version, the Crawford's game.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So going back to, I don't know if I'm messing up your
no, you're fine.
Way of telling things here. But so going back to Palladium Fantasy then. So Is this fantasy setting taking place in its own world, or is this like an Earth? Okay.
Yeah, it's its own world.
Tell me about that.
I mean, it's cool. It's, you know, it's one of those settings. So humans, well, it depends on the I'm more familiar with first edition than all the second edition. And Palladium is one of those games where they do have kind of a, what a vampire. It's not, what's the term where you have the story going on through the publisher's books?
Oh, like a meta.
Like a meta plot.
Yeah.
So Palladium doesn't have a total meta plot, but they kind of have a soft meta plot built in the books.
Right.
And so as supplements come out, it kind of does move the year forward. So I'm more familiar with the older stuff and not with the newer stuff. But like when you open up that first edition Palladium Fantasy and you're reading it, so humans aren't the up and coming, like humans are there and they've got empires and all that, but they're not the up and coming species anymore. Now the up and coming species are the Wolven. And the Wolven are like 8-9 foot tall humanoid wolves, right? And they're based kind of like the Roman Empire.
Mm.
And the Wolven are bringing all the monster races kind of together. And is a coalition and kind of controlling the other monsters and getting them together. And the Wolven are like a major force in the world, which is kind of cool. But it's kind of like I say, it's like D&D on steroids, like psychic powers, like D&D. It's almost in the older editions, it's really hard to get them. Like not all races can be psychic in Palladium, but there a lot of races have like a 30, 40, 50% chance of being psychic. So like you have a lot more characters that might be whatever character class, but also have psychic powers. And then there's just straight up like, you know, psychic character classes as well. So it's a mix of that. It uses points to cast. It doesn't use like Vancian magic. But he's got a big history built in the world. They're elder gods, and the gods are kind of more like Egyptian style gods for the main pantheon, which is kind of cool. But there are like elder, like Cthulhu kind of gods, like in the background, the old ones. And depending how you want to do it, they're different. You know, you could either follow what they're setting up with their metaplot stuff, or you can just obviously run your own adventures. But it's a neat world that they've got all the standard things in the world, but all the standard like races and all that.
So like elves, dwarves, and all that.
Yeah, jazz. Elves, dwarves, you know, kobolds, troglodytes, all that. Some of them aren't quite the same as in D&D. But they're all like, they have a changeling that you can play in this world. Like when I was running it, Joe Richter was playing a changeling who can obviously shapeshift back, you know, like shapeshift back and forth. It's a neat world. It's well done. It's the coins for the world are it's based off like Eastern coins here in our world, but like they're circles with a hole in the center, so you can put a string through them.
Nice.
So they can carry coins on string, which is kind of, you know, like in high school you see that, you know, it's like, wow, because I never saw anything like that before, you know. It's like, wow, this is cool. It's neat.
So
yeah.
Basically they use kind of like Canadian money almost,
like
loonies and toonies and, you know, colored bills.
I didn't see any milk in a bag in the
Hey, you know, it's interesting, only half of Canada has bagged milk and the other half doesn't. So it wasn't until I moved out to Quebec that I was like, why is the milk in a bag? This is weird, man. But now I love my milk in a bag. You know, everybody should drink milk out of a bag. It's like one of those Capri.
Capri Sun. Right?
Yeah. So, OK, so we have the fantasy setting.
Mm-hmm.
That was first. And then Rifts came after that, or there were some like other stuff.
Yeah, Rifts was about 7 years after that. In between that, you had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was huge. We had Robotech, which is huge. Beyond the Supernatural was before that. One other thing that they do in this world that's really cool, this was an idea introduced in Beyond the Supernatural and then capitalized on Rifts and other books. They use the idea of ley lines, which are kind of cool. Like, you would think of longitude, latitude lines on the globe, where they're like magical versions of longitude and latitude, and magic runs along these ley lines. And so a magic user in these games on a ley line has more power because they can pull the power of the ley line. And that goes into the Rifts, like the Rifts would pop up on ley lines. And they have a ley line walker as a character class in Rifts who can, they can just like float down the ley lines. Magic users and, you know, like, you know, energy. But that first shows up in Beyond the Supernatural.
Okay.
With their horror game. Like, say, you have the superhero setting. You have Nightbane, which is, like, say, kind of like a Nightbreed setting to some degree. Ninjas, super spies. They've got the zombie one that came later. They've got Systems Failure, which came out at Y2K. It was like it was the capitalize on the Y2K thing. It's kind of... they have like these energy bugs that go through electrical lines. Whoa. And they're the bad guys in that setting.
That's
cool. It's kind of a neat setting. Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, man, but Y2K was kind of a letdown in terms of like apocalypses. I thought that, you know, I feel like we've in our lifetime, we've dealt with a lot more severe things than Y2K. So come on, Y2K, get your shit together.
Now you're going to get somebody that was a coder that got called back and worked 120 hour weeks trying to fix the code at the last minute.
That sounds like it was probably one of those like really good action movies where Bruce Willis was there having to protect this guy. I may just be describing the plot of a Die Hard movie, but okay. So let's say I'm not going to use Savage Worlds. Let's say that I want to like get into Palladium and I want to do, like, let's just say I'm going to start with the fantasy section. So what would be some books, some like key picks in terms of like books that I would want to get?
I would pick up Palladium Fantasy First Edition because it's easy enough to step up. If like you get into Rifts and other stuff, you can buy the second edition later or you can easily convert up. But if you're playing it as a standalone game, I think First Edition actually is a better game than second. I would get first edition Palladium Fantasy. I would go that way. The game's out there now. If you want fantasy, I would go that way. I would buy first edition Palladium Fantasy. I'd buy the first book, see what you think of it before you buy anything else. And then after that, Palladium Fantasy has a good number of source books as well, actually.
Okay, so these, like, I'm looking at the website. It says here, like, I don't know if I'm going crazy or not, but, like, this is so... So it says first edition Palladium Fantasy RPG foil hardcover. And the price, I'm pretty sure, is American. But, I mean, even if I did the conversion to, like, 2 billion Canadian, it's still pretty cheap. So... Like,
it's probably on sale. Yeah, they print all, so that you can buy these PDFs. By the way, you can get them on DriveThruRPG PDF and stuff.
But they
do hardcover runs, like special runs, and they may have they probably had some. Like I've got one of those. I've got my old book too, with that cover that you see that black cover with red dragon on it. Yeah, so I've got one of the original ones, but I do have one of this one too. But yeah, so it's $41 for this foil hardcover.
Yeah, which and that's cheap.
Yeah, it is. Because when you look at the Rifts commemorative hardcover, the Butts edition is $37. So if you go a little lower on that, like go one down row and to the left, and you see the Rifts 30th edition. It's on the right hand side.
Okay, so I see Rifts. I see the RPG.
Okay, go back where you saw the Palladium. This is great listening. Go back to where you saw Palladium Fantasy foil hardcover for sale.
Yep.
What? I don't know if are you in the sale section or are you in the?
I'm in the fantasy section.
How'd I get there? Okay, so go to the store. Go to sale items.
Oh, okay. Store. Sales.
Now. You're going to scroll down, looking on your right-hand side, about four or five rows, and you're going to see Rifts RPG 30th Anniversary Edition.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
But anyway.
Don't worry about it. So, but that edition is called the Butts Edition because it's got a Spurgoth slaver, these interdimensional slavers that come in, and they have these three female warriors, like, on this floating thing.
Okay, I know the cover you're talking about. Yeah,
and it highlights their rear ends, and that's why people call it the Butts Edition.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I would go with just the regular first edition, and I mean, grab the PDF and just check it out. You know, if you're into hardcovers, that premium hardcover, you know, is a great way to go. If you want to learn the system. Like the simplest version of the system published right now and most coherent is probably the zombie game because there's no magic and other stuff mixed into it, you know?
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not that into zombies anymore.
Yeah.
I'm zombied out. So Dead Rain is those, but so that doesn't, I mean, I own the Dead Rain. I own pretty much all these, but that's not, I don't know, unless somebody really wanted to run it. I probably wouldn't run it, but it's, if you want to see a clean, simple version of the game, that's a good, actually After the Bomb's not a bad version of the game either.
Okay.
And After the Bomb's got the mutant animals and the, you know, post-apocalyptic, and that one's pretty cool.
Right.
That's a good one to go with too. There's a lot of cool stuff in that book because you have all the mutations, the animals, you can build your animals and make your characters however you want. So that's another one I'd recommend to people for like a more lighthearted apocalyptic, you know, post-apocalyptic game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, did you have anything else to add or do you feel like you've covered the whole?
I think we've hit the highlights of it. And like I say, if I'm happy to come on or if you get people call in and have questions, I'm happy to help you field questions or. Like I say, if they're interested, check out the Glitter Boys. They do a great job covering all this. You can go listen to the man himself, Kevin, and they talk him through the history of the company, and he talks about all this, tells stories and all that. So,
yeah, definitely have that in the show notes. So, I felt like I was going to ask you something, and then I...
Okay, last thing I'll tell you, you're talking about Savage Worlds. I'm sure you've heard this before. One of the great things about Savage Worlds is it plays better than it reads, right? those exploding dice using cards at the table, the cards for initiative, yes, and all, that actually comes alive at the table. And the Benny economy, there's two ways to approach Benny's. One is the game is kind of designed to have Benny's flowing fast and furious. So you're giving Benny's to players as they're doing cool stuff, and then they're spending them right back and forth. The other way to do it, some game masters, yeah, they get enthralled in the game and they don't always remember to give out Benny's. So for them, they set it like a timer, and every hour they give players Benny's. So
okay, that's
either one of those can work.
That's actually a really good tip, because that was one of my concerns about, because I wanted there to be a flow of Benny's, and mm-hmm. I don't want them to hoard them, just to use them to soak wounds or whatever. But I'm notoriously bad, because like you said, I'm one of those game masters that gets so focused on the game that I forget little things like that. So yeah, I'm gonna have to make some sort of like a little thing to remind myself, like, you know, maybe I will put an alarm, but
yeah. Well, it depends how old is the group you're playing with.
They're all in their like early 20s. So
you just assign one of them to be the clock watcher and tell you when it's time to go to Benny's.
Okay, cool.
You dole that out.
Makes sense.
So who wants to be the?
That's the, a good. The Benny, that's
you,
good.
You know, and then tell them at like every half hour, remind me, and I'll give everybody a Benny. Or yeah, you know, however, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good. That's actually good too, because I feel like as game masters, we take on a lot of responsibility mm-hmm. to run that game at the table. And, you know, I think it's important that we, especially because these are new players, right? And so the kinds of things that I'm teaching by running the game is the things that they're going to take and incorporate when they play, right? So I feel like it's important. It's incumbent upon me to give them a good idea of how to do it. And so kind of teaching the next generation, like, hey, you know, you guys are just as integral to this game, right? It's not my game, it's our game. And so therefore you should take a certain amount of responsibility around the table in keeping it going. And I have to say, like, all of my groups have been fantastic. Two of them are newer. Mm-hmm. One of them's is more like veteran players, and especially my veteran players are very much, I definitely feel like a collaborative spirit with them. And but yeah, to definitely like instill that in like a newer generation, I think is important. So good. I'm glad that we got some good GM tips in here. So I feel like this was a really good conversation. I feel like this is, you know, it was informative to me. I hope it was informative to the guests, or to the listeners, I should say. And I feel like this is kind of conversation that, like, just, you know, two dudes who love gaming chat about. And I love how you're so enthusiastic about the games that you love, and that you're not stuck in like some sort of like a tradition of like, well, you know, I just play this one game and this is the be all and the end all. Like, you genuinely love games. Like, you're always talking about. So yeah, listen to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. He's always talking about cool stuff. And yeah, I just really, really appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're a super busy guy, so your time means a lot to me. And yeah, anything that you want to plug or anything you want to say as we close this up?
No, I really love what you're doing. I'm looking forward to hearing your other interviews. Your interview with Matt Finch was on point. It was great.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that was such a fun, he was such a great guy to talk to. So
yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do in the future. I'm happy to come back anytime.
Awesome. Maybe we can make it a feature at, you know, I love what you're doing with Joe Richter on your show. So, all right, my dogs are going mental. So yep, I'm going to have to sign off now. But thank you very much again, Jason, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And I always appreciate your elbows up. And we'll chat in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That's all for this week, folks. Music and stingers by Reed Reimer of Fable Factory Studio. Cover art by John McNally. And a special thanks to Edward Vallee, the voice of Hector.
Greetings, listener. This is I, Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger. Not that milk drinker Jason. We in the dungeon always appreciate whatever love you can give us. So please, share the podcast, send your messages, and do anything that will unclog our algorithm. We really appreciate it. Plungers up!
And remember, when you're plunging in the dungeon and nature calls, watch out for mimics disguised as toilets. They're a pain in the butt.